and you're listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
Support for this program comes from Greater Madison Music City. Through proven strategies, success stories, and challenges, the Music City Circuit presented by Greater Madison Music City will highlight music tourism's role as a driver of urban transformation, offering valuable insights on how to shape our future as a music city while empowering our local musicians and music-related businesses. The Music City Circuit, coming soon to select streaming platforms. More information at ourgmmc.org.
Welcome to the Access Hour, where each week WORT offers you the opportunity to fly your program over the radio. The Access Hour is WORT's commitment to community access to the airwaves. For this hour, we have turned the airwaves over to a member of the public. The views expressed on the Access Hour do not necessarily represent the views of the station, its staff, its programmers, or the board of directors. But let's now begin our next foray into the freest form program on the WORT schedule, the Access Hour.
Welcome to WORT's Access Hour this Monday, February 10th. I'm Monica Messina, a volunteer with the Wisconsin chapter of the Lupus Foundation of America. Over the next hour, we'll be learning about the cruel mystery of systemic lupus. Systemic lupus is a chronic autoimmune disease with no cure. The full name is systemic lupus erythematosus, which is a mouthful, so it's often simply called SLE or lupus. It has been recognized in Western medicine since at least the 1200s, but still today, the medical field does not know what causes lupus. Back then, they named the disease lupus, which means wolf in Latin, because people with the disease had a dramatic facial rash that looked as if they had been bitten by a wolf. But that kind of rash is rare nowadays. Instead, about half the people with lupus will get a facial rash that covers both their cheeks and runs over their nose, which looks more like a butterfly. In fact, the symbol for lupus is a purple butterfly. But what's important to know is that it's not just a skin disease. It truly is a systemic illness that can affect all organs. Symptoms range from joint and muscle aches and extreme fatigue, which are the most common, but there are rashes, anemia, light sensitivity, headaches, hair loss, sores in the mouth and in the nose, seizures, depression, and anxiety. And incredibly, there are even more symptoms than these. And lupus shows up differently in different people. As you can tell, this is a very complex disease, and it often overlaps with other conditions, which unfortunately can contribute to the difficulty and delays in diagnosing SLE. The average time it takes for a person to get their lupus diagnosis after the start of their symptoms is about 6 years. Meantime, the undiagnosed and unmanaged disease causes inflammation that damages body systems and major organs such as the kidneys, the heart, lungs, and brain. Before the diagnosis is made, the person can suffer with many mysterious symptoms and no clear treatment. And then when the disease flares, their symptoms worsen, and this has an enormous impact, not just on the person with lupus, but on their entire support circle, their family, friends, caregivers, and medical teams. The disease is not common, but it's also not rare. In the U.S., there are approximately 16,000 new cases each year, but awareness of this chronic disease is really low, especially compared to many other chronic diseases, such as multiple sclerosis. 90% of people who have lupus are women, often younger women, and in the U.S., SLE occurs more in Black, Hispanic, American Indian, and Asian populations than in white. Lupus has been called an invisible illness because the symptoms are often not noticeable to others. And also, it's not talked about in the media much. In 2017, more awareness was raised when the singer Selena Gomez publicly revealed that she has lupus because she needed to undergo a kidney transplant. In about half of lupus cases, the damage from lupus can lead to lupus nephritis, which causes kidney disease and failure. Maybe we need more famous people to talk about the disease. That would be one way to build awareness in the general public. And greater awareness could mean that people will not have to suffer for so long without a diagnosis. And most important, greater awareness means those people and their families who are living with lupus will have more support from the rest of us, so they do not have to suffer alone with this invisible illness. That's what we're trying to do here today, by bringing you stories from people living with lupus and by hearing from their doctors, too. First, we'll hear from Kathy. Kathy is a wife and mother in her early 60s. She was born and raised in Janesville, Wisconsin, and attended Madison College. She now lives in Northeast Pennsylvania. Before starting a family, Kathy was a catalog buyer for 15 years. Then she became a stay-at-home mom to raise her four kids. The youngest two are now 28 and 26 years old. While raising the kids, she took on a few part-time jobs. But then Kathy tested positive for lupus in her 40s when her two youngest kids were under 12 years old.
Got diagnosed with this 15, 16 years ago, and it's kind of changed everything I do.
So let me ask you, since you brought that up, how did you first hear about lupus?
I've only heard of it in passing, but I started getting these chronic migraines and my blood pressure. What was it when we went to the ER?
210 over 180.
Yeah, did you hear that? 210 over 180. And everything they did, they kept testing. I'd be in the hospital, then I'd be out, nothing would come up. Finally, after being hospitalized 6 to 9 times, we went to New York City to Lenox, and I had a team of people there that were amazing, and I tested negative positive for lupus. That was my first hearing of it and needing to understand all that there was with it.
So you said you were hospitalized at least 6 times before you heard about this diagnosis?
They were searching everything. They had, you definitely have to have your patience, but now I do know women over 40 that present with chronic migraines and hypertension, they will test for lupus. That's become protocol. And all it is protein in your urine.
How many years did it take of you suffering from your symptoms before you actually got the diagnosis?
No, there was no diagnosis. And I didn't, the lupus was the first thing. And then as we got that diagnosis and being sent to specialists and whatnot, then I tested positive for rheumatoid arthritis, which evidently they kind of go hand in hand from what I've been told.
I hear that it took at least 7 years of you having these symptoms, such as the migraines, before you got the lupus diagnosis.
Well, I got it within the first two to three years, but then all the rest of them started snowballing after that for the 6 to 7 years.
So how many doctors did you need to see?
I saw every doctor there was. I think at one point there was 6 or 7 of them.
All specialists, all different specialists?
All specialists in every area. And then they also, too, they're a teaching hospital. And I thought, you know what? Let people learn about this. Go ahead, bring them in.
And could you name some of the specialties that were part of your team?
Management. What's the one when international, we travel, infectious disease, rheumatology, pain management. I had nephrologist. I had, what's the blood doctor? I can't think of the name.
A hematologist?
Hematologist, primary, and a neurologist.
Many specialists, nephrologist for the kidneys, hematologist for the blood, infectious disease. Anything else you want to tell me about that kind of odyssey of figuring out about this chronic disease that you had in the diagnosis stage?
Yeah, I was working full time and doing as much as I could do, but then it just, you know, it just really creeps up on you, and your family makes a big difference. I get emotional because I've always been there for my kids, and I couldn't be there for my kids. That was the hardest part, because I'd come home exhausted, and I would literally sleep in my scrubs till I woke up the next morning. I didn't eat dinner or anything because I was so exhausted.
And that started in your 40s. How many kids were still home? Were all of them still home?
And Trevor, both of them were. They were in middle school and elementary school.
Wow. That leads me to ask you about how did you tell your family and friends about your lupus diagnosis?
Well, it was no secret. I was in and out of the hospital, and everybody that was a good friend, of course, was privy to that, and family. And so the kids just, they learned as we learned. I tried to shelter them while they were still so young, just letting them know basic things, and my husband respected that. And then as they got older, they're like, we're adults. We know how to handle this. We've got to know what's going on with you. We've been honest with them ever since they were almost out of high school. And they've been really good sounding boards and really, really helpful and encouraging. It's nice to have that part of your family that close to you that understands what your day-to-day is, and where they can slip in to help or do something, they just do it.
So were there any challenges, since not many people understand the disease of lupus, that you had to do a lot of explaining to them?
100%. And I had to read. I mean, I knew it was autoimmune, but, you know, everybody these days is getting autoimmune, I believe, from all the crap in our food and the air we breathe and everything else. It was a lot. I read a lot of books. I had books sent to me from people. the more educated you are, I think the better off you are.
And that's clear that you've done your own research, and then you would have to do the educating of the people who are around you.
I think now more people know of it because, like I said, so many people are getting diagnosed with autoimmune diseases. And yeah, I just think there's a lot more knowledge out there with the internet, Dr. Google and everything else, you know.
Well, so moving away from the diagnosis and more about your treatment, you know, the disease of lupus can manifest so differently. It's almost unique to each individual. Would you share how it mostly affects you and what symptoms you have?
Early on, they call it the butterfly rash on your face. Mm-hmm. I was that almost every night, to the point where it was a silhouette of a butterfly on my face, really red and really hot. I would get short of breath and I would just have to go lay down. And that happened a lot the first couple years. Now it doesn't happen that much. Your fingers turn blue or purple, same with your toes. All kinds of those things, just through time, it definitely takes over your body. Getting diagnosed and getting the right medication, because like you said, it manifests in so many people, so many different ways. I've had heart stuff from it, from fluid on the heart, from using the steroids, which is like a great medicine. It's like no other pain medicine, but they couldn't find a drug that worked good for me. I went through many of them and had side effects and so on and so forth, but from using the excess steroids, my bones are now brittle. I have osteoporosis. I've had both knees replaced. And when they took the knees out, they disintegrated. And I had to have a hip replacement, and my femur bone disintegrated.
And so, that, you know, is because of the continued use of steroids to control the disease?
100%. But when you're in a bad flare, especially with the pain, you would do anything to get out of that pain.
Understandable.
To some oils and things, those I thought they would help, but they didn't. But if I'm in a bad flare, I'll eat half a gummy or something if I need to.
It sounds like there's no escape. So talking about trying to treat the symptoms, what medications do you take besides steroids? Are there many, and are they expensive?
Oh gosh, yeah. I've been battling for 2 months with the one that has, I think when we first started talking, I told you I finally went to John Hopkins 3-4 years ago. I Googled this guy. He's like number one in the area of research. He's an awesome man. And he looked at me and all the medicines I had taken and all the everything that I've been through. And he said, tested positive for RA. And he goes, I've always said once tested positive, always positive. But he tested me for psoriatic arthritis, which opened up a whole new bevy of medications. And thank God he did. I've been put on Costinex, and my life has changed 75% from it. It's injection, and it's amazing. My insurance company approved it, but it's $4,000. Then after my insurance pays their part, I would still have to pay $1,200 a month.
Wow.
So there's all kinds of things. I called, the doctor sent it to me for free at first. And then I started calling the manufacturer and called every week begging. And I got into their program and they gave it to me for free. Every year, your renewal, you have to start fighting for this stuff. You have to get everything from your doctor. You have to get all your insurance stuff. And like I said, I've been doing it for a month and a half and I still don't have an answer. There's a lot of anti-inflammatory medications that you can do as well.
Mm-hmm.
But long run, they affect your kidneys and your liver, so you have to be really careful about the enzymes. So it's a constant dance every 3 months. You get your, you know, see where everything's at. You got to keep on top of those organs, make sure those don't fail. So
does that mean that you have to get a lot of tests to monitor all those organs?
Yes, I have to have labs.
Okay, which means a lot of blood tests.
Well, it's no big deal. You get used to it.
Well, how often do you have to do your blood tests?
Well, I do it for the rheumatologist every 3 months. And then I usually, if something else is going on, they're doing labs for my primary will for backup stuff that maybe the rheumatologist didn't order. That's another thing. I don't want to jump around on you, but having a good primary doctor is key in your overall health care. Key. They keep you on top, especially as you get older. You need to have testing for different things more frequently. At the beginning, I used to get sick a lot because of the autoimmune. You get everything that's out there. And since she has stayed on top of it, I have not been sick for eons. I used to get pneumonia every year, and I see her every 3 months as well. But that is overall care for yourself and your disease is one of the best things you can do for yourself.
Well, I'm glad that you're able to have an excellent primary care physician. And then I wonder, it can be difficult to get into specialists like rheumatology. Have you, and you said you went to New York City. So are you traveling a lot for to see these specialists?
Well, that's the thing. That's exactly right. You can't get in because there is a shortage of rheumatoid doctors big time right now. And so everybody's working extra hours. When I leave my, I have one here and then the one at Johns Hopkins. He says 3 months, but I can't get in until summer. And then if something's going on, I'll message him and he'll get me right in. Same with my doctor at Johns Hopkins, same thing. And that's what everybody should do. With my chart these days, you can stay on top of your health.
Okay.
And take hold of it.
It sounds like you have a really cohesive medical team and you've got good communication with them. And I'm wondering if you also participate in research studies.
I do with my rheumatologist here and at Johns Hopkins. I entered a big study that they're doing with blood work and all kinds of other things. But yeah, definitely, because my doctor there, he does like 60% just research. That's what he does. Mm-hmm. But because of shortage, he's had to see more patients to help out.
So you do participate in research studies, even though there's not maybe a direct effect for you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Anything I can help, that's easy.
So as someone who has been diagnosed with lupus, you also feel like it's important for you to be involved in educating and in research?
Yeah, especially since my daughter got diagnosed 2 years ago.
Oh.
It's anything and everything I can do.
And how old is your daughter?
She's 26, 24. She was a gymnast, state champ, and she started being really tired. And at 24, she was going to bed at 8 and taking a nap before dinner. Mm. I mean, nobody should be doing that at that age. So yeah, she did. And now it's just finding the right medication for her as well.
So there's evidence that the disease can be genetic, that it can be run in families?
Absolutely.
Okay.
They weren't piecing that together back when I was diagnosed, but when she started having symptoms and her primary tested her for it, I got my guy here and he got her right in and he looked at her, he goes, it is, it's genetic. Okay. It's genetic.
It sounds like the symptom when you flare and the symptom even of your daughter, the first one is a lot of fatigue.
Yes.
Overwhelming fatigue. You said your disease is well controlled now. So do you still get flares?
Oh yeah. But when I get them, you can kind of feel them coming on and weather has a lot to do with it. Like the freezing cold, that's just, it makes your bones hurt. And then, you know, barometric pressure, it always flares. But if I overdo certain things, I'll flare and it can keep me down for a week or more. I'm noticing I flare less, but the flares last longer.
Moving into the topic of coping, what are some of the burdens of living with lupus? Maybe, for instance, not being able to have a full-time job. I don't know if that's something that was difficult for you, is difficult for your daughter.
So all my friends told me, my family, due to disability. And I was like, I didn't want to be quote-unquote one of those people. And so I finally did, because I was doing little part-time things here and there, but it was physical and it was getting to be too much. And I got it by myself. I got it right away.
Talking about disability?
And it does help. Mm-hmm. It definitely. So you have money coming in. But yeah, one of the burdens is sometimes you just can't do what you want to do, or stuff's going on and it's going to be too much, or travel with family or friends, but it's too much walking or too much this or too much that. That and, you know, like your hands, especially around the holidays when you're cooking. I mean, I can't open cans. I can't open anything without help. Sometimes I can't pick up big pans and hold them. It takes your strength away.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the biggest burdens. And you know what? One thing that always makes me mad, and it's only because people care, they're overprotective of you. You know, try to help you here, help you there, which is sweet. And a lot of times I do need it, but I'm not one of those people that succumbs to those kinds of things.
It seems like you're kind of walking the tightrope of needing support, right, but not wanting to be coddled.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well put.
Who are the people who support you? Who are the people that you lean on the most?
My husband, my kids, family, and a handful of great friends. That's all I need. The older I get, I only need a handful.
When do you feel like you're the most understood about your chronic illness?
Again, probably the same people. They know it by my mannerisms. And I sometimes don't even have to say anything. And, you know, just go down on the couch for the day.
I've heard the expression lupus warrior when I've participated in various events for raising awareness of lupus. Huh? Is that something that, a term that you use?
A lot of people have called me that.
Okay.
I appreciate it. I do.
What should people not say to someone with living with lupus?
Their pain or whatever symptom they're having that day. Offer to help. But again, sometimes you just want to be left alone. Then let them be. Let them know you're there if you need them. But kind of just feel the room, read the room.
Joining us now is Dr. Levinson, a rheumatologist from UW-Madison. Dr. Levinson, please briefly tell us about yourself and your background, especially related to your interest in the care of patients with lupus.
Thank you for having me. I'm a rheumatologist, like you said, at UW-Madison. In particular, I work at the UW Lupus Clinic, and so it's my pleasure to take care of both Lupus Clinic and regular rheumatology patients throughout the year.
Thank you for joining us today. We'd like to ask some more questions about the mysterious disease of lupus, like the fact that lupus is sometimes difficult to diagnose, or it seems to take a long time. Can you speak to that?
Unfortunately, lupus can vary significantly between different patients. And I sometimes tell my patients that nobody's lupus looks exactly the same as somebody else's. And therefore, it's difficult for patients as well as for clinicians and primary care doctors to recognize each individual person's version of lupus. As well, there's no perfect test for lupus. It's a constellation of tests and how that patient presents that can get us that diagnosis of lupus. So that can sometimes take a long time to evolve and present itself or just to be recognized.
We understand, at least from one of the statistics, that it can take as much as 6 years for someone to get a diagnosis. Does that ring true for you?
Unfortunately, it can take that long, oftentimes because some of the symptoms may not all occur at the same time. So somebody might have some joint pains or some sun sensitivity or a rash, and they don't all occur together. So maybe the patients or their primary care doctors don't put all of that together to think of lupus right away. And it can take some time for that to evolve and be obvious. It can take some time for patients to feel comfortable bringing these situations up to their primary care doctor, or because this is unfortunately rare, it might not be the first thing that our doctors in primary care or the ER are thinking about. Therefore, they're not even bringing it to the attention to get tested or to the patient until it becomes really obvious. There are other versions of lupus in terms of kidney disease or lung disease where it can be really evident early on. But in the more typical common versions of lupus, which is mostly with a rash or joint pain, it can take a long time for that to become clear that it's not some other more common cause of those symptoms.
You said there's a constellation of tests, and are there some tests that are almost always needed for every lupus patient?
I think that most patients who have been in a rheumatology office or have Googled lupus or rheumatology will have probably checked something called the ANA test. And that's a pretty important test when you're thinking about lupus, but it's only important if it's negative. If it's negative, it basically rules out lupus to almost 99%. When it's positive, it does not mean that a patient has lupus. It means that they need to do additional secondary testing. And that's where oftentimes coming to the rheumatologist can be helpful to do more testing, more specific testing, depending on the symptoms that the patient is having. And of course, discussing those symptoms that they're having as well. And there is no one perfect test that can rule in and decide that this has to be lupus.
We also understand that it's important to get an early diagnosis if possible. Can you speak to that, why it's important to get the diagnosis as soon as possible?
Lupus has a lot of long-term complications that we are always worried about. Luckily, those are also rare and not for every patient, but the complications of lupus, as many people might know about from celebrities, is the kidney involvement and joint involvement. And that can be particularly debilitating or long-term detrimental, particularly with the kidneys. That can lead to permanent damage. And so we really want patients who are highly concerning that they may have lupus or may develop lupus or have a diagnosis of lupus, to be seen and established with rheumatology and to continue care with a rheumatologist for the rest of their life, to make sure that we're monitoring for any new occurrence of symptoms, making sure that not only are they feeling well, because obviously most patients think about how they feel, but even if they feel well, that the rest of their body and their organs and their lab tests and their inflammation is all controlled and not accruing permanent damage.
If a person who has lupus feels well, there may be some damage. How would you monitor for that damage? How would you, if the person feels right. Well?
To take a step back, I always am treating a patient, not a number. So I want to make sure that, you know, we're definitely listening to the patients. And some patients are really resilient and have been dealing with pain for a long time. Especially our rheumatology and lupus patients may have been dealing with inflammation or pain for, like you said, 6+ years before they were seen. So they might think some of these things are normal. And we need to make sure that that is true based on our exam and our communication, as well as with those lab tests. Traditionally, for a well-controlled lupus patient, we really do check their labs and that is blood and urine tests every 6 months to make sure that their inflammation markers are showing good control and that their urine tests are showing that their kidneys are also doing well and not having any injury.
I wonder how you explain this diagnosis to patients.
Because it can take so long to get into seeing a rheumatologist, depending on where you live. And that's probably also a big problem with that delayed diagnosis. But when I see my new lupus patients, I tend to kind of advise them that this is an unfortunate autoimmune condition where their immune system, for whatever reason, and we usually don't know why, has decided to flip and attack their body rather than the infections that are coming in like it's supposed to be doing. And oftentimes that can mean that their immune system is attacking or inflaming their skin, their joints, and then, like I said, the other organs that can be involved, like the lungs, kidneys, and most other organs that can be involved with lupus. This is an autoimmune condition where the immune system is just confused. That's why a lot of the treatments and evaluations of this are to monitor that the immune system is doing well. And sometimes, if we have to, suppress that immune system. And a lot of these symptoms may not be visible. As most people know about lupus, it's that butterfly rash on their face. So it's really easy to see that. Most patients with lupus may not have that obvious rash. And so it's hard for them to know whether or not they're in a flare. It's hard for them to explain this to their family members or coworkers. And so we tend to want to be their advocate in rheumatology to kind of help them recognize what may be the symptoms of lupus, what they should be looking out for, and to kind of educate them on how they can approach lifestyle, particularly when it comes to work or home life, to make sure that they are as functional as possible, because sometimes some of these symptoms aren't overtly in your face, pun intended.
Right. It does sound like the person who comes to you needs to have really a good communication with the rheumatologist and with their primary care doctor. Is their primary care doctor involved as well?
Absolutely. It is very important that all of these lupus patients be hooked up with some type of rheumatology care, and that's forever and long term. Obviously, because the symptoms of lupus, like I said, could be very different between one lupus patient and another and can involve a lot of different organs or skin or joints, it's really important to make sure that every lupus patient is having a thorough discussion with their rheumatologist about what they're experiencing. And then also remembering that lupus patients also can have every other disease or disorder or issue that the non-lupus patient can have, and therefore those are things that they should be honest with their primary care doctor about as well to make sure that nothing is being missed. And that also that we're not using lupus as a bucket for every symptom and disregarding other concerns. And lupus patients, unfortunately, because of that chronic inflammation, can have higher risks for certain kind of cardiac and cardiovascular diseases and heart diseases, lung diseases. And so for these patients, we should be making sure that their primary care doctor is their advocate, that they are well established with rheumatology so that we can partner with them to make sure that their lupus is well controlled, but also knowing that there may be the requirement to also see other physicians, like in cardiology, pulmonology, and definitely with that feared complication of lupus nephritis, which is kidney disease, to make sure that they're seeing their nephrologist. And so oftentimes it does take a full team, starting with the rheumatologist and the primary care doctor, to make sure that these patients are getting the good care that they're getting and making sure that all of the symptoms that they're dealing with are or are not part of their lupus, and that we're taking every complaint seriously to make sure that we're not missing anything.
And would the rheumatologist in rheumatology care sort of be the hub for seeing those other specialists that you mentioned? Do you think the rheumatologist would be the kind of front line to know whether or not to refer?
I think the hard part about that is that it's really a collaboration between the primary care doctor and the rheumatologist. If for those lupus patients who have really maybe a more milder course and they've done really, really well in terms of their lupus care, they may be falling back on their primary care doctor to kind of manage the majority of their new issues or symptoms and day-to-day care. Right? The primary care doctors are so important when it comes to, you know, cholesterol and hypertension and cancer screenings. And that's even more important in lupus patients who have high levels of inflammation. And so as rheumatologists, we really rely on the primary care doctors to do what they're doing. And the primary care doctors obviously rely on rheumatology to manage the lupus. And so I think that that's just a really good partnership. And I would say maybe not one is leading the charge, but kind of working together and then using that as the jumping off point to say, hey, we think you might also need to see the lung doctor. Maybe you do need to see the kidney doctor or the nephrologist. We should be using the primary care doctors as our main initial hub. But when you do have a diagnosis of lupus or any rheumatologic disorder, that the rheumatologist can oftentimes work hand in hand with the primary care doctor.
Thanks for making that clear. One other thing I'd ask for some clarification on is the concept of a flare. And what is a flare in lupus and how often do those occur?
I would go back to the idea that lupus is different for every patient. I often counsel my patients when they first get this diagnosis that in the first couple of years, their lupus may evolve and hopefully settle, and that they will actually become more familiar with what their lupus is. And so I will say that as I get to know my patients better, they tend to become more confident in being able to describe what a lupus flare feels like for them or what it is for them, and being able to recognize it when it first starts or even before it starts, and they know their triggers as well. So we know with lupus that, you know, one of the main triggers that we worry about is excessive sunlight and UV exposure. And so that might be a trigger, particularly in the summertime, that can lead to a rash, and that rash can evolve into a full flare. That might be fatigue, joint pain, obviously the rash I described. And when we check those labs, there's elevated inflammation or lupus labs become abnormal. And that's why it's really important to be well in touch with your rheumatologist when you're having these symptoms and to know your own lupus well. And it also means abiding by some of those recommendations that we make for lupus patients, like being careful with sunlight, with UV light, wearing sunscreen and big brim hats, and taking any medications that are prescribed.
Speaking of medications, are there typical medications used to treat lupus patients?
Here at the UW Lupus Clinic, which is run by Dr. Shivani Garg, we are huge proponents of hydroxychloroquine, which is traditionally considered the baseline medication for lupus. And every lupus patient, unless they have contraindications or have been told to stop it, should be on that medication. It has been shown to decrease the flares and the organ risk in the patients that have lupus. There are stronger medications. And like I said, lupus is an autoimmune condition where your immune system is acting a little haywire. And so those medications may be necessary, but those can suppress your immune system. And so we definitely will use them when necessary, but they are not our baseline medication. And that base medication is often that hydroxychloroquine or Plaquenil.
And is that a medication that a patient would be taking like on a daily basis, or what's their medication regimen?
So that medication is weight-based and kidney function-based, but for the most part, most patients will be taking that medication every day. It does build up in your system, so we don't like when patients miss a dose, but it luckily does work long-term. So one missed dose is not going to be highly detrimental, but we really advise our patients to take that every day as they're supposed to.
I'm wondering, from some of the information we had from the patients we've interviewed, that some of the medications can be really expensive. If they're thought to do best on taking hydroxychloroquine regularly, is that a very expensive medication?
No, luckily it is not very expensive. It can sometimes be hard to get that medication historically when it's been used for other uses. It has been hard to find that medication, but luckily it has not been a problem to get hydroxychloroquine. And traditionally it should be not too expensive. And there are a lot of programs for lupus patients to make sure that this can be available to patients when necessary. And, you know, at UW, we have our rheumatology team and our pharmacists and the UW pharmacy team that can be incredibly helpful to make sure that our patients are getting that medication. Unfortunately, you do raise a very good point that some of the other medications, the stronger medications, or patients who may not have insurance for the hydroxychloroquine, then it can become a little bit of a cost burden. But I would say that every patient, lupus or not lupus, should be working with their local primary care doctors, social workers, hospitals and centers, or reaching out to the UW Center, that we can work with them for financial assistance programs, because none of that should be prohibiting them from getting the care that they need. And there are definitely programs out there, whether it's your local healthcare facility or the Lupus Foundation on a whole, that would really try to find ways to make that better for the patients.
That's reassuring to know that there are those supports. And it leads me to the question, if people are feeling so ill and sick with lupus, I imagine it may be difficult for them to navigate all of these systems. How often do you see patients where it's good for them to have an integral support system in their family or their friends?
You make a very good point. I mean, here I am talking about these patients going to other doctors and getting routine lab tests, and who do they talk to, their primary, myself. And so it can get incredibly confusing and overwhelming. And then on top of that, you're right, during a flare where you're just achy and fatigued and you don't really want to have to make a phone call or figure this out, it can be very difficult. It can be very depressing, and it can really hurt the mood to feel this way and then not know where to start. Again, the most important is, you know, on my part as the rheumatologist, I want to make sure that my patients know that I am here for them, that we have a great team that's open to them. And I hope that patients always feel that way about their rheumatologist or their lupus experts, and that it may require having some difficult conversations with the support team at home, whether it's family members, friends, coworkers, describing what this could be. Myself and most physicians would not have a problem if you, as the patient, brought in family members to be able to listen in and understand and educate a little bit about what's going on, or to have resources, which I oftentimes will refer patients to the Lupus Foundation website or the American College of Rheumatology website, so that they can use that to educate their family members or loved ones, so that they can also be an advocate for their care and be there to support them. And then also, it's always important then when you do leave the doctor's office, and that goes for every doctor's office, that you really understand the plan and that you have a good understanding of what's expected of you and what you are expecting of the doctor, so that there is nothing that's missed. Because when you are maybe not at your best, or maybe in a flare, or maybe at your worst, that you do know where to reach out to and have a plan that's already been set, and that you don't have to start from scratch.
All good advice. It's encouraging to hear how supportive the rheumatology, I imagine, team, it's not just you, but maybe a team in your clinic to support these patients and their complicated autoimmune disease. To wrap up, I just wonder, since we are here to kind of promote awareness about this disease, and what you just spoke about was helpful in saying to educate the people around the person who has lupus so that they can receive the support they need. Is there anything else you'd like to share as a way of awareness about the chronic illness of lupus?
With lupus, and I would also add that for a lot of rheumatologic disorders that can either be associated with lupus, overlap with lupus, or be not involved at all, sometimes it's not really obvious. Not all patients with lupus might have that butterfly rash that you can see from across the room. And so it might not be so obvious, but that doesn't mean that you're not feeling them. And so just being more comfortable with that diagnosis, realizing that being open with those that would be willing to be your advocate is always important. And then using rheumatology and your doctors as a way to get support and potentially educate those around you. And that for those people who do not have lupus, but know somebody who does have lupus, to recognize that they can have very good days. Lupus patients can have great days, and lupus patients can have flares. And it might not be really evident, but that we should support those patients even when they're having that bad day. And they may need a little bit more support at that time and not disregarded.
Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us today and expanding the awareness of this autoimmune disease.
Thank you for having me.
Kathy's lupus symptoms began in her late 30s, early 40s, but we heard that her daughter started having symptoms even earlier, in her 20s. Luckily for Kathy's daughter, she and her mom already knew about lupus and got into a rheumatologist right away to begin treatment. That means no long delays that could risk greater organ damage for her daughter. Our next guest is another young woman with lupus who also has a mom that was diagnosed with lupus very young. Her mom was only in her teens when she started having symptoms. About 15% of lupus patients are younger than 18, and 1 in 10 adults with SLE are diagnosed in childhood. Lupus in children is called pediatric or childhood SLE, and it can hit harder in kids than in adults. And like adult lupus, pediatric lupus occurs more in girls than in boys. Now we'll hear from Amira, who, like her mother, was diagnosed with lupus in her teens. Amira is now in her mid-20s. She was born and raised near Milwaukee. Her lupus symptoms and markers began when she was 16, but unfortunately, her diagnosis was delayed until age 18. Despite the burdens of lupus, Amira's passion is fueled by the adversities she's experienced, and she is giving back to the community by founding a nonprofit. Her nonprofit is called Mira's Footsteps, and its mission is to empower and uplift those who have been impacted by trauma, helping them reclaim their voices and rebuild their lives. We know that there's no single test for SLE, and you were diagnosed with lupus when you were in your teens. What was your diagnosis journey like?
I've always been ANA positive, and so I was always monitored. And then at about 16, I had an illness that had brought out more symptoms of lupus. And so then I was referred to a rheumatologist. At that point, I was referred to the same rheumatologist that actually seen my mother. And so I was a little bit weary going in, considering my mom's situation of her being misdiagnosed with lupus, because as we know, the symptoms can vary. And so at 18, I was formally diagnosed.
So it sounds like your journey was bumpy.
Absolutely. I feel like there was a lot of uncertainty, and I was unfortunately displaced and put into a lot of rooms because people just didn't know because of, I want to say, interpersonal bias from what we've seen before when it comes to lupus symptoms. At a point, we stopped making room for new symptoms and new findings, which I think kind of caused a little bit of a disconnect with the adolescent rheumatology approach versus the adult rheumatologist approach.
We know that lupus has a higher incidence among Black, Hispanic, American Indian, and Asian populations. Is that relevant to your experience?
Absolutely. I come from a mixed race family. I like to say that I'm well-rounded. I'm Black, white, Hispanic, and Asian. My mom was the first person in our family to have an autoimmune illness. And we were always told, like, well, it'll skip a generation. We know it's prevalent amongst these races, but we weren't told anything beyond that. And so I will say that I have, through my own efforts and with like the help of Lupus Foundation Wisconsin chapter, we've been able to just make more awareness happen when it comes to our communities, especially our Black Indigenous communities, and just facilitating more workshops and informing more people. As we know, when it comes to like the Black, Hispanic, and American Indian, as well as Asian populations, there's so many prevalent symptoms that are just overlooked and they don't know, like, oh my goodness, I thought this was eczema and it's a butterfly rash, right? And I think just bringing that awareness piece and being like, hey, there is such thing as autoimmune illness. Does your family have a history of it? What do these things look like? I think it's also mindful for people to just look in that retrospect and just try to connect and even ask questions if they're curious. Maybe I have lupus. Always advocate for yourself. And I think that within those communities, we've just lacked education around it and we've just lacked support around those communities.
And your experience in building awareness then has helped you to build connections with other lupus warriors?
I have been able to, I would like to say, be brought into a lupus family with the Lupus Foundation of Wisconsin. And I would say within the years, we've been able, as mentioned, to do all these support groups. And so even at the Lupus Walk, I'm able to meet these warriors who've been battling lupus for years. And I have always known lupus to be kind of an isolated illness. And that's how I used to associate lupus, because I only ever assumed my mom was going through it. And I only say that because this wasn't something that was prevalent around me. I wasn't even made aware, like how we have awareness about breast cancer and diabetes and all of those things. Mm-hmm. There's not that same love to lupus. And so I really enjoy going out in the community and just conversing with people. And I'm like, yeah, like I have lupus. And just through by interpersonal connection, I've been able to meet people like, oh my goodness, I didn't even know you had lupus. You don't even look like you have lupus. Like, what are your methods for, you know, self-care and all those fun things? And so I like to think that I do things that feed my soul, right? And so just having simple conversation with people.
We know that having a chronic autoimmune disease does require a lot of support from your family and from your friends, and of course from your medical team. Is it correct to assume that now you have a good medical team overseeing your rheumatologic care for lupus?
Absolutely. While I've had an interesting timeline when it comes to finding a rheumatologist that made me feel heard and that explained things well and that just had great mannerisms. On her way out, Dr. Yasmin, through Aurora, she was amazing. She understood that I had very odd symptoms, but I wasn't being treated appropriately. And so she referred me to the Rheumatic Disease Center, where I came across Dr. Jonathan Cushy. From the moment that I stepped in his office, he was extremely formal and just gave me a sense of relief, but also he matched me with the compassion. You can tell that he cared. And it made things very easy as far as explaining what I was going through, or like, hey, I know this is really odd. Some days my hands will swell up and nothing else will swell up. And then I'll be fatigued one day, and then, but my labs will be completely normal, you know, for these things. And so he was like, no, Amira, did you know X, Y, and Z? You know, I think more physicians are becoming interested in the topic of rheumatic issues as well as chronic illness. And so I feel very thankful that I was blessed to be in accordance with Dr. Cushy.
So with the medical team that's knowledgeable, but also compassionate and listening to you, that's an important component, obviously. And that is where you'll get your treatments. And so what kinds of treatments do you have to have for lupus?
So for a long time, I was just on Flaquenil.
Which is hydroxychloroquine, right?
Yep.
Okay.
And so I felt that while the drug was helping, I needed an additive. I was still very swollen, still having a lot of other symptoms. And so Dr. Cushy is actually the one who introduced azathioprine as well as Benlysta. And so I've actually just started the Benlysta infusions. I'm on my second one. Haven't had any side effects. I'm interested to see how Benlysta works for me. And I'm just more excited because when my mom was first diagnosed back in 1989 or 1990, I want to say, she wasn't made aware of, but simply given prednisone for her flares. And while we know that that doesn't do anything, it from her overuse of prednisone and other medications in that realm, it would break down her teeth. It would break down her bones. As we know, long-term usage of steroids will do that. And so it really makes me hopeful that I'm going to have a long, fulfilling life because of this treatment.
The use of the steroids was really the only tool that they had available. And yes, the side effects are pretty dramatic, not just to the bones, but also cardiovascularly, really puts high stress on your cardiovascular system and puts you at risk for more cardiovascular disease, we now know. So yes, it would be great if people today who are discovering they have lupus get the benefit of good research and better tools.
Absolutely. When lupus patients, at least for myself, are introduced to medication, I'm always weary.
Can you say more about that, about being weary?
Yeah, I guess while we know that there's trial and error with everything, I want to know that this medication is for me. I want a transparent approach when it comes to this medication. I just don't want to be put on this medication. And that's why I really appreciate Dr. Cushy, because he builds a game plan and he lets me know, like, okay, we're going to try Benlysta for this tenure. We won't see results until about March. We're going to reevaluate at this time. And if you feel like you've seen improvement, then we're going to discuss across everything and all your medications to see if this is something that you want to continue. I really feel like I have a voice in my treatment, and I feel like I haven't received that prior within my care. And I think that's really important because we often miss the mental aspects and how we can sometimes feel overwhelmed or just displaced when it comes to treatment. And it's very scary.
And when you say displaced, in some ways, are you saying you're not being taken seriously, or you're not being listened to, or maybe you're being disrespected?
Yeah, I think just unheard, a little bit unheard. Mm-hmm. I expressed in my adolescence many times, I'm having these symptoms. Is it a possibility I could develop lupus in the future since I'm ANA positive and I'm already having random C4 labs and all those fun things that I was aware of because of my mom. I seen her treatment and seen kind of those things. And so I was just always aware because I knew that this was a risk for me. And as mentioned, finding a doctor that's for you and that you feel listens to you is an important aspect of feeling comfortable within having lupus because, well, you can follow up yearly with a rheumatologist, but if there's no change and labs are changing, are we making adequate progress within treatment? Are we trying to prevent flares? Are we trying to make sure that I don't get to a point that turn around from?
And when you say your flares, you mentioned your hand swelling and fatigue. Are your flares similar or different from your mother's?
I would say they're quite similar. I have inflammation in my joints, in my hands, in my elbows, in my feet. I also have some issues with like my back and my hip. So I get cortisone injections for those. I do see a pain management doctor. I also do have white matter on my brain from the lupus, and that's been interesting because I have done all the fun things like spinal taps and all of those things, but I'm not matching all the markers for MS. And so while we know that lupus has organ involvement, that's been the most involvement that's been aggressive, I should say, on my body.
That would be concerning. I'm sure that was a bit scary when you were going through that phase of evaluation.
I've noticed like different cognitive changes. And for me, I really take pride on being 24 and educated and just informed on a lot of things, right? I like to think that my mom has been disabled her whole life, but she's given me an immense series of knowledge, you know, when it comes to dealing with the world and dealing with lupus and illness and advocating for yourself. Because if you don't advocate for yourself, who will? My biggest takeaway was, well, I'm so young. If I'm having demyelination on my brain now, that's all over, not in one region of the brain. What does that look like for me by 30? And I think that there's so many things that are just in the unknown. And I've learned to give grace because I know that I'm doing everything in my control to prevent things and to be on top of my care, you know? And so what's out of my control, I try not to stress over, right? Just adds a little bit more lupus fog to your brain.
Yes, yes. That is one other aspect of living with a chronic illness is the risk for depression and anxiety. Those two really come up a lot for patients who are coping. Is that something that you have experienced or seen or, you know, are trying actively to ward off?
I really appreciate that question. Thank you for asking. I think, as mentioned previously, we forget the mental aspect and what lupus or any chronic illness really does to you. I have been so lucky to be around a bunch of mentors who have motivated me and pushed me to found a 501c3 Mirror's Footsteps. And I think that we need more peer support and we need more crisis-informed care when it comes to lupus, because there are times where I've been in a bed for 4 days straight and I can't get up and I don't feel useful as a 24-year-old adult woman. And I feel like I can't do things for myself. I like to think that I can't show up in a room and advocate for things that I have not had lived experience in, but also being transparent and allowing others to be safe in my space. I do experience anxiety and depression, and I also take medication for those things, right? Just to be able to have a functioning life. And there are also times where I genuinely want to give up, and I'm like, I'm done with this medication. What's the point of this? We know that lupus is eventually either going to shut down my body or I'm going to have some changes that I have to make amends with as a 24-year-old woman, right? I know that I can't keep up with my peers that are 24. And I think that just show up for yourself and give yourself grace. Dealing with any disease is really, really, really hard. And dealing with the disease that you sometimes can't control in a certain capacity, you feel like you have no power over your own life. But I think that those support groups, and if we try to get more peer support into these spaces within rheumatologist clinics and within these groups, we would really benefit, because it's nice to have someone with lived experience who's went through those things or who has mutual feelings about these things versus like talking to a therapist who has no idea what living with lupus is like.
You're making me think of the term lupus warriors, and as any warrior would benefit to have peers and comrades. You're battling this together.
I like to think it's not just my fight.
Mm-hmm.
We are all in one fight. We have came so far from what seemed impossible to it being possible. I like to think I used to pray to be in a position that I'm in now. And being a lupus warrior just means just advocating for yourself, showing up for yourself. I cannot tell you enough how many people I've came in contact with who have had siblings or parents pass away between just about 1980 to the early 2000s because they just didn't have enough information on what lupus does to the body. And so medications like Benlysta give me hope that, well, we can help your body respond better. We can help how your body is able to, you know, combat these things.
As I understand it, that if we can help reduce the inflammation, that's going to reduce the damage and result in a longer, healthier life.
Absolutely.
And one of the other difficulties besides all that we've already discussed is that much of this care, there is a cost, a financial cost, and not everyone has good health insurance that covers this. Have you encountered people who have had that barrier?
I have a dear friend of mine who's 20, she'll be 22. She's an Asian young woman, and I mention that because within the Laotian community, there has been more prevalence of lupus showing up. she had a change in her state insurance that caused her to avoid going to the rheumatologist for a couple months, which ended up due to the hypertension in her body and all, like a mix of things. She was going into some early organ involvement that I would say it's not ideal to hear at 22 years old. And it just makes me so angry right now. These healthcare systems work. And I even had to change doing the self-auto-injector of Benlysta to doing the infusions because my insurance changed with a private insurance. And even though I had X amount of coverage to those five dispensed medications, I can't pay $2,000 for five, you know, doses of this medication. It's not feasible. It's not realistic. The economy that we live in, it's crazy. Inflation's crazy. And as mentioned, I'm a young 24-year-old woman that's still in school, that's working full time. And so while I feel so maxed out, I don't want to have to feel like I have to choose between my good health care and being on state insurance to simply make sure that I'm able to support my illness, or to make a good living and be self-sustaining for myself as well.
It can be it is an extra burden that seems to cause more harm for people who are already coping with a very serious illness. So would you agree that in addition to the support circle and how important they are and the peer support, that building awareness about the disease could be actually another way to cope, to help a person cope?
My favorite thing that I've tried to do with my peers that I've came in contact with, as well as employers, is that we know that there are safeguards for disabilities. We know that there are safeguards for working people who need FMLA, who need these things to survive, right? But I don't think that employers really understand your day-to-day when it comes to lupus. I have had to leave positions that I have been very well versed in, and I've loved them. But because of random flare-ups, I've had to take a couple of days remote or a couple of days off. That has slowed down the productivity of the organization simply because I'm in a flare and I can't control those things. And while I know my employers ideally don't want to let me go, they have to make a decision based on the longevity and the productivity of their company or organization. I respect it, right? But I just wish that we were met with a little bit more compassion and safeguards so that we're able to live a life. And so we don't have to apply for disability to simply be successful or choose our health over being self-sustaining and working. I think if we brought more awareness, there would be more understanding, like there's understanding of how to prevent diabetes or how can we prevent obesity, right? Why aren't we advocating for lupus awareness?
We know that with the greater awareness, there can be more possibilities for policies that support and allow people with chronic illness to also thrive. And as you said, not have to choose between having a job or going on disability.
Absolutely. And I will say I've been in that boat. I've lost all hope. I was extremely sick. I felt fatigued every day. I had no motivation because of my depression and just being sick. And I applied for disability. And that process is just strenuous all in itself, right? Because you can only work up to 20 hours while you're doing that. And everything just seems very impossible. And I think if we talk to more local leaders and common council, talk to your state representatives who are in your community, who are representing your community, who know the community firsthand, just have a conversation. We are the people that make the world turn around, and we are the people that advance things. Without our stories and without our resilience, we have no power. And I think we should maybe look into, like, hey, when a new elect comes in, how do we set a meeting with them as the Lupus Foundation of Wisconsin to just bring awareness, right? I like to think that we have to make people uncomfortable to be comfortable again in a polite way. And I think that this is definitely a way that we can do that.
I think that's really good advice. I hope the people listening today will go out there and act on it. It's been really a pleasure to hear about your story and how you've overcome the adversity of living with this chronic disease of lupus. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you, Monica. I really appreciate your time. I appreciate your work.
Thank you for listening to our conversation today, which I want to dedicate to all the lupus warriors and their families and friends. As we heard today, lupus, or SLE, is a disabling and mysterious disease that attacks primarily young women. The illness is not well known, and it can take a long time for a person to know what they have and how to manage it. Building greater awareness is at least one way we can help to solve the cruel mystery of lupus. If you'd like more information, we've listed some resources on WORT's Access Hour page. Another great place to start is the website of the Lupus Foundation of America, or LFA. Locally in Wisconsin, there's the Lupus Support Group for Women of Color, which meets monthly, and the LFA's Wisconsin chapter, where I volunteer. LFA Wisconsin provides a hub of resources and support. For example, current lupus research updates, listings of local rheumatologists and local lupus clinics, ways to join support groups, fundraisers, or volunteer, and even financial assistance. The website for the Wisconsin chapter is lupus.org/Wisconsin, all spelled out. And on Saturday, March 1st in Madison, we'll be holding our annual bowling fundraiser, Strike Out Lupus. For more information, please visit lupus.org/Wisconsin. Thank you for listening.
This is WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
Hey, I'm Keiko from Crash Faster, and you are listening to Ryan Parks on Something Wonderful, WORT 89.9 FM, Madison, Wisconsin. You're listening to listener-supported community radio.
WORT is turning 50 in 2025. We're already hard at work on events and special programming to celebrate this milestone. We've gone through our archives at the station and found many photos, flyers, documents, and hundreds of hours of taped shows that go all the way back to our first days on the air. We have so much to share with you, but we also need your help. Do you have favorite photo memories of WORT that you'd like to share with our listening audience? Or other things related to WORT history, such as newsletters, flyers, videos, or any other treasures? Send us an email at 50years@wortfm.org. That's the number 50 and the word years, and tell us what you have. Or you can call our hotline at 608-321-9594 and leave a message with a description of what you've got, and we'll be in touch. Thank you for being a part of WORT, and stay tuned for more information about our 50th year.
FPC Live presents Galentine's Day, the 2nd, featuring a lineup of local female-fronted bands.